Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And today we're going to focus on your lawn. How's your lawn looking? Does it need a little TLC? Well, Doug Soldat is here to help. Back with us, he's a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, soil testing, landscape irrigation. So he can talk about a lot when it comes to your lawn, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions. What do you want to know about improving your lawn? What about reseeding? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Doug Soldat, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Yeah, great to be here, Larry. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, most of Wisconsin has experienced at least one period of extended drought. What should we be thinking about when it comes to fall lawn renovation and, you know, after summer stress?
Yeah, it was a tough year. We started off with that drought, and then I feel like lately it's just been so wet and hot and humid, which is, you know, good for diseases to come in. So we've had a lot of challenges. But here's the good news. I'm just looking at the forecast here for Madison, and the high temperatures are going to be dropping into the 70s, and the low temperatures are going to be dipping into the 50s, and that's optimum growing condition for the grasses that we grow in our lawns in Wisconsin. So it means that help is on the way, and we can start to recover those damaged areas, seed some new grass, and start to get things looking good right in time for winter.
So our lawns still have a few months to go before they go dormant. Watering, should we be, you know, on a day like today in southern Wisconsin, at least you're probably not going to water your lawn. But
no, yeah, and honestly, watering is probably the cause of most of the trouble that we see. So, you know, people get worried about the drought, but really drought grasses are really drought resistant. Sure, they'll turn brown and go dormant, but they'll bounce back. What it's harder for the grass to bounce back from is too wet conditions. So then their roots start to rot away. So when people have irrigation systems and they've likely been overusing them this year because of the drought that we started off with, I like to say just turn it off. Turn off your irrigation system and run it manually so it doesn't run on a timer that does like Monday, Wednesday, Friday or whatever. Just turn it off and flip it on when you're out doing some yard work and then flip it off. But those scheduled irrigations usually end up in too much water.
Thinking about fertilizer too, I know some the recommendations like over the years have changed a little bit, but what about fertilizer? When should we be applying it?
Yeah, so Labor Day is probably the most important timing for getting a fertilizer application down. And so fertilizer is really critical for helping the grass to get back the density that it's lost over the summer, thicken up, and also prepare to outcompete weeds next spring. So most of our weeds that we battle germinate in, well, some germinate in the fall, but a lot of them germinate in the spring. And if you have a dense turf in the spring, you're going to have a lot fewer weeds to contend with. And so Labor Day right now is a perfect time to start thickening up your lawn to prevent those weeds from coming in.
I look at my lawn, I got a lot of creeping Charlie.
Yeah, some of them, it sounds so easy when you say it. Of course, some of those weeds will win almost no matter what you do. And ground ivy, creeping Charlie, that's a tough one to get.
Yeah, in terms of weed control, I mean, should we really be thinking other than fertilizing?
Yeah, not yet. I think so. The optimum time for ground ivy, creeping Charlie, and dandelion, and other broadleaf weeds is really the first frost. So if you want to take some of the weeds out, your best opportunity to do that is when the leaves start changing colors on the trees. And so the mistake that people make is that a lot of people put the herbicides down in the spring, or they do it now when it's still too early. So if you hold back until October, even late October, that's when you're going to get the most effective weed control.
Doug Soldat, our guest, and lots and several callers online. There's still a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Or again, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Seth in Amro, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my question is, I had a yard full of quite a few, I'd say 15 big mature black walnuts, and this year I took those trees down. What I'm left with is, over the years, a yard full of thousands of holes where the squirrels would bury the whole black walnut, and the holes can be about inch and a half deep. My question is, what's the best way to go about filling those holes in and then reseeding that? And then the other question is, should I do that in the spring or the fall?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So are you looking to completely reseed the entire lawn, or just these little spots?
Well, I got a pretty good lawn. It's just the holes. You know, you walk out there barefoot, and it's uneven. I just want to smooth out the whole yard, I guess, is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, okay. So there's a couple different ways to do it. If you have existing grass that's there, that's good. And the chances are that the majority of it's going to be Kentucky bluegrass or creeping red fescue, which will easily fill in gaps like left by squirrels digging and stuff like that with fertilizer. And now that the trees are gone, there's going to be more sunlight. So you could just take a wheelbarrow and like individually fill in, you know, take a shovel, spread out some topsoil is a good choice. You could also use compost, although compost is going to be probably less effective at getting a smooth lawn. But, you know, depending on the area and how much work you want to put into it, obviously topsoil is heavy and compost is going to be light. You're just looking at spreading that material over the uneven areas and then raking it to get it to be smooth. And you might need to do that a couple times. So fall is going to be the best time to do it because it's a good time to plant seed if you want. And spring is a kind of a worse time to do it because there's a lot of weeds that might germinate in that mix or in those gaps that you're forming. But yeah, just basically take a material and smooth it out, and you know, be patient because it's not going to be perfectly smooth the first time you do it. But the more you top dress that material, rake it smooth, the smoother that surface is going to be.
Yeah, good luck, Seth. Thanks a lot for calling. Scott in Madison, give you a chance now. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I've given up on grass and gone completely to Creeping Charlie. Anything you can do to help me make sure that my Creeping Charlie stays healthy?
that's a new one. Creeping Charlie or ground ivy likes shaded environments, and generally it won't need a lot of help to stay healthy. So
no.
it'll you know, that's the reason it's there is because it wants to be there, and you've given up, and that's a good strategy. Sometimes if you know you're fighting against the current, you might as well just let the ground ivy take over. And so to keep it healthy, it's not going to require much. It's the environment it's going to be in. It's not a turf, you know, it's you're going to still have a mixture of other plants that'll come in. It's not going to form a lawn, which is why we don't use it as a lawn, but you shouldn't need to do anything else to manage it. It'll take over as you stop trying to control it.
Yeah. There you go, Scott. Thanks for calling. I can understand your feelings on that, Scott. Thanks. Betty in Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about reseeding. We had new concrete put in on our sidewalks, and so on the side where the sidewalks are, they had take out some of our lawn. I tried to put that back in. Most of it died, didn't do. So I plan to reseed those strips. My plan is take the existing soil, mix in some topsoil or something, because we have clay, and mixing that, and then getting a seed, putting down, and then the top cover, I don't know what to use. Straw blows away. How about peat moss? Will that work? And fertilizer?
Yeah, that's a pretty good plan. Sidewalk edges are always tough, and grasses, I think the reason the grass died the first time is probably likely just it's too hot and humid. So, but coming up now, you should have more success with the germinating grass. However, even if you get that grass to grow, it's it's never going to look as good as the stuff in the middle of the yard, because you have that base of the concrete that's probably 3 inches down. And so your plant roots will be limited to 3 inches, and it also gets really hot there, and there's salt on the sidewalk. There's all kinds of reasons that that's a tough place to grow grass. But all that said, yes, your plan sounds good. For the mulch, you could try probably a paper mulch might be a better choice than peat moss. Because the peat moss can also get dry and blow away, but a paper mulch tends to retain the water and then stick to the soil a little bit better. So it's usually like a blue or a purple colored byproduct of the paper industry. That's probably the mulch that I would use. And don't bury it. You still want to see about 50% of the soil and 50% of the mulch when you're done with it. So the biggest mistake I see with mulching is people put too much on. So go about 50% and then try to keep it wet twice a day if you can. And you should have a nice green stand of grass in a couple weeks.
And we should be able to pick that up in several different locations, shouldn't we?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. Garden center, local garden centers will have usually that type of mulch, or even the big box stores will carry it.
Okay. Betty, good luck. Thank you for calling. Well, Rana in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hello to your guest. I'm so glad to get a hold of you guys this morning. My daughter and my son-in-law put in a beautiful seeded lawn early spring, got the grass growing really well. Just really pretty. Nice. Did a good job. And then we had that kind of that dry spell, and I think they got busy with life and didn't keep the grass watered. And now they have a lovely yard of crabgrass.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know what I'm going to tell them is the remedy, but I wanted to hear it from you.
Yeah.
The remedy is they're out of luck.
They're out of luck.
And
that's
start over.
That's pretty good. It's a pretty good guess. It's hard to say for sure without seeing it. But crabgrass is one of the worst weeds you can have, because it's going to die at the first hard frost, and then they're going to have a lot of bare soil. And then when you can get big rainstorms in October and November, then they can have soil erosion that takes it over. So they may want to consider completely starting over. The fall is the best time to grow grass. So that what happened was is not uncommon, and that's why we don't recommend seeding in the spring. Now, of course, sometimes you just have no choice, right? And so if they want to start over, that's likely the best case. Now, if the crabgrass isn't too terrible, and there is enough good grass in between there, they may be able to make it through the fall winter period, and then apply a crabgrass preventer in spring, and then just fertilize the existing grass and help thicken that up. So it's kind of a question of, you know, is it entirely crabgrass and then you want to start over? But if it's 50-50, you probably could do that less intense option that I recommended. It's just prevent the crabgrass next year and fertilize the lawn to let the existing grass thicken up again.
Yeah, that's a good choice for sure if you can do it. Rana, thanks so much. Appreciate your call. Doug Soldat, our guest today, professor in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Jane Rotunda is our producer today. Aubrey Ralph is our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your lawn today on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Doug Soldat from the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Always great to have Doug stop by, and there's lots to think about in this fall season, so keep listening here. Lots of callers online right now, so let's take a call. Brian in Winona, Minnesota, we'll go to you next. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing today, guys?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to know, one, when's the best time for aeration of a lawn? I've been told it's in the fall and to overseed then, but I'm concerned about some crabgrass that's gone to seed and then getting in those holes and making it worse in the spring.
Right. Yeah, that's a good thought. So generally, our recommendation is to aerify in the fall because there's fewer weeds that are germinating in the fall. So if you wait till spring to aerify, there's all kinds of weeds that want to germinate. So the good news is about the holes that you're creating is you're really only affecting like 1 or 2% of your entire lawn, which is one of the reasons aeration is not super effective. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I think if you do have a lot of crabgrass now, like I just said to the previous caller, you want to control it because crabgrass can be a really bad environmental weed. When you have a lot of it, you have a lot of bare soil in the cooler parts of the year, and that soil can erode and hurt your lawn and also hurt the lakes. So I would go ahead and if you want to aerify now, go ahead and aerify now. But because you have crabgrass that's going to throw seed everywhere, prevent that crabgrass in usually April or early May in the spring.
And aerating, I mean, do we need to aerate anyway?
It's definitely not something that every lawn needs all the time. And the way I see it, or I like to describe it, is if you have a lawn and you can tell that certain parts of your lawn are compacted from, you know, kids or dogs or just overuse, you want to aerify those areas. But it's not like, you know, hey, it's fall time and I have to aerify. So look for spots in your lawn that are showing signs of compaction or less growth than parts of your lawn that are not as highly trafficked, and that's when aeration will be beneficial. But it's not something everybody has to do all the time.
Let's take another call. Mike in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks for the program. It's great. I had a question. I moved back from North Carolina several years ago, and in North Carolina, I put in a Yukon Bermuda yard, and North Carolina is still considered a cold weather state. And Yukon Bermuda was developed from the University of Oklahoma and the U.S. Golf Association as sort of a cold weather Bermuda grass. And I was just questioning how Wisconsin might do with cold weather Bermuda or a Bermuda type grass, where what I'm always looking for is uniformity. Either it's all green or it's all brown or something like that. And that Bermuda seemed to be very hardy and was good at controlling weed growth and things like that.
Yeah, that's great. So the Oklahoma State is developing cold-tolerant Bermuda grasses. So Bermuda grass is a warm-season grass, and it gets killed by low temperatures. Unfortunately, you are not going to be able to grow Bermuda grass in Wisconsin yet. The Yukon and the other varieties that they have just aren't able to handle our cold temperatures. But they are in states like Indiana now, and they're in Nebraska, which 10, 20 years ago was unheard of. So as the breeders continue to make that grass more cold tolerant, we're getting closer to be able to do it. But I will suggest to you zoysia grass as an alternative. Zoysia grass is a warm season grass that can tolerate Wisconsin winters, and we seem to talk about it most times when I do garden talk, and people either love it or hate it, and it sounds like it would be a good candidate for you. So that's another warm season grass. Check it out, zoysia grass. It might be a really nice option for you if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, it tends to brown up though, doesn't it?
Yep, exactly. As soon as you get the frost, it'll turn brown, but it won't die like Bermuda grass will in our cold winters. So, and that's why people tend to hate it, is that it's brown from, you know, late September all the way through June. But this caller said, hey, I kind of like the uniformity. And, you know, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get green grass in the summer and brown grass for most of the fall and winter and spring.
All right. There you go. Kathy in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi there. I had an observation for the gentleman who called earlier about holes in his grass. Recommendation I would have is to plant a pollinator garden. Take that little spot in his grass, make it a little bit bigger, and plant some plants that the bees and the hummingbirds and the pollinators, the butterflies and things like that can take advantage of. And then also for the gentleman who had crabgrass and, I mean, Creeping Charlie in his grass, we have that and clover and all that, and it's really good for the bees. But the other thing is to National Wildlife Federation can certify your lawn and your property as a national wildlife habitat. And that's a really, really good idea because we need anything we can get. that's going to encourage pollinators to produce our food for us. And they're fun to look at and enjoyable to see.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. Comment.
Yeah, that's, so we do research on that, and we have a lawn that we have had in the ground, or we have actually a bunch of different lawns that have been in the ground at a research station now for 16 years. And this year we went and did a survey of all the different plant species in these different lawns. And a lot of times we think about lawns as monocultures, and they're just all one thing. I mean, we're finding 8-12 different species in just 1 foot by 1 foot squares of these lawns. And so if you you can maintain them to be very diverse and have all kinds of different plants. And clover is one of, you know, we call clover a weed. I don't think clover is a weed. Clover is one of my favorite plants that I think belongs in our lawns, because it gives nitrogen to the grasses, and it can produce flowers that help the pollinators. So there's different ways to look at it, and I totally agree and respect the caller's points there about lawns being habitats for wildlife.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate it. Well, Larry in Milwaukee, give you a chance now. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thank you, Larry. I live in a large condo complex. Our lawn is mostly fine fescue, and we want an herbicide to kill thistle and dandelion and other broadleafs. We've been using a nasty herbicide that has 2,4-D in it, and we're looking for something that's less dangerous. Reduced risk herbicides like iron are more expensive, so I don't think the complex is going to pay for it. What about something like triclopyr or a compound of triclopyr? Is that moderate cost or moderately effective?
Ooh, that's a good one. So iron is, like you said, a very expensive but also essentially it's not technically organic, but it's a very low toxicity product that we can consume it, we can eat it. It's a fertilizer that will kill weeds, but it's expensive. Triclopyr is not a... So then the EPA has different kind of classifications of herbicides based on their toxicity, and triclopyr is not in the EPA's reduced risk program, but it has characteristics that are quite similar to other products that are in the reduced risk program. I don't think there are very effective herbicides that are reduced risk against thistle, which is tough. So I think you're actually right on the mark. I would recommend triclopyr or clopyrrolid, which is similar, as a lower toxicity herbicide that's going to be effective against the weeds that you mentioned. So timing is really important too. So consider making those applications in the late fall when those tough to control weeds are going to be most susceptible to those products.
And by late fall for Larry in Milwaukee would be?
Yeah, usually. So first hard frost. It's not, the timing isn't like ultra critical. It's just, it's too early now. So wait until you're thinking about frost, and then you're in the right ballpark.
All right. Good luck with that. Thank you very much, Larry. Just want to, I don't know if you can see our email list here. Colleen emailed in some photos of her lawn looking brown and patchy. Do you see those, Doug?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, she wants to know what's going on, wonders if it's her grubs. She doesn't know about ants. They did have a tree in the affected area years ago. How does she get rid of whatever's killing her lawn?
Colleen, if this year was like a record album and we needed to choose a picture for lawns, this is a picture I pick. I've seen a lot of this. This is basically summer 2021 stress on lawns. So you have a lot of fine fescue in your lawn, and it got too hot and it got too dry. This is likely a combination of drought and summer patch, which is a disease that happens in hot weather and is particularly damaging to fine fescue. And so the you said, how do I get rid of whatever's killing my lawn? I really think this is just a weather-induced problem. Right, and that's perfect for the show and this timing, is that now we're going to work on getting the grass that did survive to to spread and fill in those areas. So the rains have returned to most of Wisconsin. I would say make a schedule a fertilizer application for around Labor Day. You should start to see recovery, and I'm guessing that this spot is going to look much better on its own. But you do have enough bare soil here where you could consider seeding into these areas. And the grasses, Kentucky bluegrass fine fescue mix would be a good choice to seed into the very thin spots.
All right, there we go. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jay in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Jay.
Thank you. I called in last year about a problem that still hasn't gone away. The gentleman suggested I might have a mold problem that's killing patches of grass, but my lawn doesn't get or stay that wet. In fact, I'm thinking maybe patches are becoming too dry, but I try to give the lawn a inch of water a week. I mow it high, and still every summer patches will turn yellow and take forever to come back, and sometimes I have to reseed. Any ideas?
Ooh, yeah. So this is tough, and since you are a repeat caller, I think it's going to take a little bit more investigation. I'm going to recommend you email me directly or contact the Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab, which is tdl.wisc.edu. And there's so many different things it could be, but if we didn't clear it up last time, let's get together and take a closer look at it. But with that information, there's just too many possibilities for me to guess at what it could be.
So that's tdl.wisc.edu, right?
Yep, exactly.
All right. So shoot an email there, and probably maybe with some photos. Would that be useful?
Yep, absolutely. You can go to the TDL website, and there's information on submission there. Or if you have my email, it's djsoldat@wisc.edu. You can reach out to me directly, and we can start to try to figure it out.
All right. Good luck, Jay. Thank you. Well, let's see. Lori in Sparta, it's your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with brown spots and the lawn, and I think it's bluegrass, and my son and I did some Googling and found something called melting out in bluegrass. We took a blade of grass and looked at it. The pictures looked similar. And if that's the case, the blade had little, like, kind of brownish spots on it. And we're wondering what to do about it.
Yeah, melting out or leaf spot. Summer 2021 was brutal for lawns. And typically in Wisconsin, we don't worry too much about lawn diseases. But in a year like this, where it's hot and it's dry and it's wet and it's humid, we can get diseases that we typically don't see do more damage than normal. The good news is that typically doesn't happen year in and year out, and we do not recommend controlling lawn diseases with fungicides. We just talk about waiting out the weather pattern and then recovering when the conditions are optimal, which is now. So those brown spots that you have may not be able to avoid them during when we have weather like we had, but you should be able to get your lawn looking good in the spring and the fall when the temperatures are optimum for that grass growth. Again, the Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab, tdl.wisc.edu, can confirm the disease and give you some more specific recommendations on how to manage for them. But I know we've seen a lot of leaf spot, which is another word for melting out. And, you know, you're not the only one, and the weather conditions played a big role in it.
Yeah, there you go, Lori. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Matt in Middleton will give you a chance. Hi, Matt.
I'm wondering why we don't see more people using. I've been using it in my yard for more than 20 years, and it fills in any little grass spot that likes to die out, and you get free nitrogen from it.
Yeah, the white clover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I cut out there. I couldn't quite hear what he said. But, yeah, I love white clover. We're doing studies that are looking at different cultivars of white clover and different seeding options and rates and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, prior to World War II, when you bought grass seed, you bought Kentucky bluegrass and white clover mixed together. They make great partners. And so I encourage people to allow that clover to spread. It's going to just reduce the money that you're going to spend on fertilizer, add some biodiversity to your lawn. It is a great option.
Yeah, thank you very much, Matt. Appreciate it. Cindy in Green Bay couldn't stay online, but wanted to know about the longevity of grass seed. Is it okay to use grass seed that's a few years old, or should you buy new grass seed every year?
Oh, that's a good question. It's really dependent on how it's stored. And so if you keep it in a cool, dry place in a bag that's open, that's your best chance. But if you seal it up like in a Ziploc bag, the seed actually, it's alive, it needs oxygen, and chances are that won't last very long. So cool, dry place in a breathable bag is your best chance. You can, if you have extra refrigerator space, you can put it in there, and that will extend the life of the seed. Generally, Kentucky bluegrass seed will be good for a couple years just on the shelf. So I wouldn't say every year, but once you start getting into the 3, 4, 5 year period, it's probably best to get some new seed.
Okay. And back to clover for a minute, Scott emailed about it. Is it possible to have 100% or a majority of the lawn be clover? If so, what kind of clover would you recommend? He recently read that Dutch clover and micro clovers would be good. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's some of the stuff we're testing. We have plots with strawberry clover and then Dutch white clover and micro clover, which are actually the same species. So micro clover is a variety of Dutch white clover. They're both white clovers. Those seem to be the best for Wisconsin compared to the strawberry clover. I wouldn't want to do just only white clover for the same reason that I don't typically like only just Kentucky bluegrass, is that the lawn environment it's got microclimates and it's diverse. You're going to those plants like different conditions. So having more species in the mix will allow those species to find their niches. And so I love mixtures of those of the grasses and the clovers together.
Let's go to Dwayne in Weston now. Dwayne, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Larry. So I had part of a tree went down, and a guy came and took out, but then he raked out my yard, all the stems. But he had this rake called the Groundskeeper 2, and I've always had a lot of thatch and dead grass, you know, deep down in, and I had a professionally thatch, but all that guy had was like a rake in front of the deck. He went way too far. But anyway, this rake was incredible. He took 5 or 6 swipes, and he had a pile of the dead grass, and it was like 25 tines, and almost like the thickness of a coat hanger, but there's each one spring-loaded and curved. And oh, my, I mean, it's unbelievable how great this rake is. And he said a lot of landscapers use that rake, the Groundskeeper, too. And then I just had a question about sod webworms. I have a lot of moths, and how many should you see before you start putting on the white moths? You know, they come up and then they eat the grass. Does he know anything about that?
Yeah. So right. So there's usually going to be all kinds of insects in your lawn that are feeding on either roots or the shoots or whatever. And typically, we're not going to recommend controlling them until you see like major damage. So just because they're there, I'm sure I can dig in my lawn right now and find some white grubs, but my lawn doesn't have patches of dead grass because of white grubs. So you're kind of just looking for that threshold. So not just the presence of the insect, which is fine, it's the kind of unacceptable level of damage. And so it doesn't sound like you've seen that yet, and I would just let it go at that point. I was talking about the sod webworm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yep. So, the rake, that sounds really interesting. I haven't seen that device yet, but I know that there's a lot of cool stuff out there. It's fun to go to the trade shows and see all these cool pieces of equipment that do cool stuff. So,
absolutely. Bill, Dwayne, thanks. Bill in Oregon, we'll go to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a septic field that's shaded. I keep it pretty nutrient poor by removing all the leaves consistently each year. And I mow it fairly often, but it's a pretty sparse plant area, and I'm wondering if you could recommend any type of seed mix and possible preparations that I could use to, you know, put in low-rooting plants or a low-rooting ground cover that would be a little more consistent.
Yeah, so your best option for an environment like that, septic field, is going to be one of the fine fescues. And so they're all fairly similar. They're also the grasses that sometimes get marketed as low-mo or no-mo, but really it's just a creeping red fescue, slender red fescue, chewings fescue, sheep fescue, and hard fescue. So those are the five fine fescues. All of those would be good options. And if you can find a grass blend with multiple of those fine fescues, those are going to be the best for that low maintenance, low nutrient, slow growing situation. Now you asked about how to seed it and prepare it. That's the most important thing, is you have to get good seed to soil contact. And so to do that, I would mow whatever is there down as low as you can go, and then rent what we call a power rake, which is it's about the size of a lawnmower, but it has a shaft on it that spins, and these tines that kind of create shallow slits in the lawn. And then you go on top of those slits that you created, drop your fine fescue seed in, and then water it, and then roll it or drive over it or walk on it just to create a contact between the seed and the soil. And then try to keep it moist one or two times a day, and you should get a really good take of that fine fescue seed.
Bill, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Doug Soldat, our guest today, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, talking with him about fall lawn care. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your lawn today with Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Always great to have Doug come by. And we have open lines for you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And you can also send photos in with those emails as well. As a matter of fact, Jill from Greendale emailed a photo of her lawn. They have these weeds growing in this patch of her lawn. Should she try to grow grass, or is it hopeless with overseeding or overspreading pine boughs and needles? Doug, what do you think?
Yeah, this is a tough one. It's hard to see what the growing environment looks like. There's sun in this picture, so that's a good start. And we like to say you need a minimum of 4 hours of sunlight, direct sunlight, to have any chance of growing grass. And I do see a few patches of the fine fescue there. So I think there's a myth out there that pine needles create a really acidic environment that, you know, they can't grow anything. That's typically not true. It's more related to the fact that there's pine needles there, and pine creates, or spruce or whatever, creates super dense shade and has a really strong root competition. I might, you know, if you really want grass here, I would try it. So I would rake everything up. I would rough up the mostly bare soil that you have, maybe bring in some compost or some topsoil, and then plant one of those fine fescues that I just mentioned to a previous caller. So it's a collection of five different species: chewings, hard fescue, creeping red fescue, slender red fescue, sheep fescue. And And then, you know, put the seed down, create good seed to soil contact, put some mulch down, and then keep it moist. And I think that that might work in that spot.
Worth
and
a
if
try.
It, if it doesn't, then you go for something that's like more of a ground cover. You just put in some bark mulch there or something like that.
Yep, there you go. Jeff in Madison, we'll go to you now. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Doug. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Yeah, I have really crummy reception. So we have a really, really small yard now, and we used to have a really, really big yard. And we're not too particular, you know, like we just want it to look nice. It doesn't have to be perfect. And many years ago when we had a much larger yard, I tried, you know, a weed service or whatever, they come and spray the lawn, and I just never really liked it. So I have my own little system, and I just wanted to check with Doug and see if he thinks this is, you know, a good do-it-yourself sort of lawn system. A couple times a year, I'll throw Milorganite out, you know, several bags. And then I just spot treat the weeds with a liquid concentrate out of a, you know, a spray bottle, you know, like you mix it and you've got this hardware store sprayer. And then I think in the spring I'll drop down some crabgrass preventer, and that's about it, you know. And I just wonder, in Doug's, you know, viewpoint, what else I could do differently, or, you know, what he would recommend with this approach.
Yeah,
one thing. We have a lot of ornamentals, a lot of, you know, ornamental beds, and I just I worry about inadvertently spraying solid herbicide on those beds, and so that's why I've taken this approach.
Sure.
Yeah, that's great. So you can think of lawn care like as a hierarchy from, you know, if you're going to do one thing, what should that be? And then what's the second thing you can add? And so you can have a range of things. So you can just kind of choose what suits you best. And so the first thing you want to do is mow properly. So mow your grass 3 inches with a sharp mower blade and mow it frequently. When you let the grass get too long, it creates a lot of stress. Okay. So that's the first thing you do. The second thing I would do is fertilize once or twice a year. And that allows the grass to remain dense. So if you get your mowing right and you get your fertilization right, you're going to have a lot fewer weeds to deal with. Now we're going to talk about weed control. If you want to control weeds with an herbicide, a liquid herbicide spot treated is going to be the most effective. You're going to use just the herbicide right on the plant. And liquids are more effective than the weed and feed granulars, which I usually try to avoid. And then the other thing, now that you say you have a small yard, think about pulling your weeds. I mean, if it's small enough where you can do it in less than an hour, that's not that bad of an outdoor activity. It takes a long time to mow your lawn. You might as well pull some weeds too. I have neighbors that do that. And so then for crabgrass control in the spring, that's a really important practice if you have crabgrass, but not all lawns have crabgrass. So again, make sure that you have a crabgrass infestation before you put out that pre-emergent. But that is a very important one if you do have it. So it sounds like things are going well for you, and I wish you luck on that lawn.
Yeah, good luck, Jeff. Thank you so much. Mike in Sun Prairie, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Hey, we got two basset hounds, and we got dog spots on the front yard. I tried putting down some lime. I don't know. Anything else?
Yeah, the lime thing's not going to work, really. And dog spots can be tough. I've noticed over the years, you know, some dogs, their urine is much more potent than other dogs, even within the same breed. It's got a lot to do with their diet. The best advice is to try to train your dogs to pee in a non-grass area. That can be hard to do. The next best thing to do is to follow the urination with like a bucket of water or spray it with something, which is also really difficult to do. But yeah, there's unfortunately what's happening is the urine's got too many salts in it. It's too concentrated. And then that immediately burns the grass, just like if you would have put way too much fertilizer down in a spot. And so that can be tough. And I wish I had better advice for you.
Yeah, there you go, Mike. Thank you. Larry in Delavan. We'll go to you now. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Larry. Doug, thank you for taking the call. I actually listened really well to you'd be mentioning somebody filling in some spots with dirt and using a rake. And my situation is that I've got about a little over an acre probably that I mow. It looks really good right now. However, I did use a box scraper years back in a section. It's really nice mowing. Where the rest of my yard, literally I for years would rent a roller to compact it to smooth it out. Now you run a mower over it and you have to go slower because you're just bouncing all over. And I wonder if you have any suggestions on what would be the best way to recover a smooth lawn.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we have spots on our research station that are like that too, where we know we just have to drive slower because it's so much bumpier. And you can try the roller again. So frost heaving and action like that will cause the lawn to become more bumpy over time. So you can bring that back, and that's best to do when the soil is sort of wet in the spring, so you can kind of mold it a bit. Otherwise, you know, top dressing with material and then dragging that over. They do make I can't think of the term for it, but it's like an implement that they use in sports fields where kind of looks like a drag mat on a handle, and it helps to get the soil into the low spots and pushes the soil off of the high spots that you top dress on. Sort of like a manual box scraper, I guess. And so you can try that. That's basically all we have is either top dress new material on top or you roll it down with a weighted roller. But other than that, I'm not sure what else you could do to flatten it out.
Yeah, there you go, Larry. Thank you. Angie in Elkhorn, we'll go to you now. Hi, Angie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question involves manure. I have access to cow, horse, and alpaca manure, and I want to use these things in my garden and possibly the grass or the landscaping. Which one's the best to use, and what's the best way to prepare it?
The best way to prepare that will be to fully compost it. I don't know specifics about the analysis of those different manures, but generally manures are going to have a higher salt content and have the potential to burn the grass. And so when you compost it, the chances for that decrease. And then we've done research with composted poultry and dairy manure over the years, and when you compost them properly, you're going to be able to spread that over the lawn and, you know, let's say a quarter inch depth in the spring and the fall. And we found that is one of the best treatments you can do to improve not only the soil, but to keep the nutrients levels high for the grass to be dense. So I would recommend composting them. I don't know enough to say which is the best source, maybe blend them together and then spread that compost over the lawn and you should be in good shape.
Yeah, thanks, Angie. Appreciate it. Chris in Wauwatosa. Hello, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and I'm really enjoying the show, Doug and Larry. My question has to do with the fertilizers that have various herbicides in them. I fertilize twice a year at the minimum, but I'm concerned because I have a puppy and I've had pets in the past and as well. And putting down those store-bought fertilizers, the bags of about 15,000 square feet. Any suggestions as to how to avoid? My yard is in relatively good shape, but I've got patches where it's overgrown with with other weeds and such, miscellaneous stuff.
I don't like those weed and feed products either. They're about half as effective as a liquid product, and you're also putting them down in spots that you likely don't have weeds. And so for that reason, I would recommend you switch to a fertilizer without any herbicide in it, and then use a liquid herbicide, a targeted liquid application on the spots that have weeds in the late fall. And so some of those will attach to your hose. You can also buy them in a hand pump sprayer. You can mix them up in your own spray tank, like, you know, kind of a couple gallon thing that you has a wand on it and you pump it to give it pressure. So there's a lot of ways to apply liquid herbicides, and they're usually far more effective than those weed and feed fertilizers.
What about in relation to the dog?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, that's one of the concerns is the exposure to the fertilizer and the herbicide. But if you're just targeting the weeds, there's going to be less herbicide down in the yard. Usually, what I like to do is apply the herbicide and then have a waiting period for it to dry. So don't let the dog out when there's still wet leaves mm-hmm. from the herbicide application. And you should be in good shape.
Doug Soldat, our guest today. Doug is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Always great to have him come by and talk with us about fall lawn care. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today for Garden Talk. Our guest, Doug Soldat, still with us. He's an associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water resources, soil testing, landscape irrigation, all kinds of things. So if your lawn needs some help, love to hear from you. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jim emailed, and he's using Roundup on his lawn. After using on dwarf fescue, how long should he wait to reseed?
The research says you can reseed immediately. However, when you're trying to remove material, it's best to wait longer so that the material is really soft and easy to remove. But there won't be any harm to your seedlings.
Donna in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Donna.
Hello?
Hi, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi, Donna, are you there?
Hello, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
Yes, I have had a bad case of grubs in my lawn, and last year I pretty much amended all the soil, replanted seeds and sections, and kept doing more and more and more, and got it going pretty good, but then this year they came back. I really don't want to use any caustic chemicals. I've been using Neemer's oil.
Yeah, so grubs, are you talking about grubs chewing on your lawn or your ornamentals?
On my lawn.
Yeah, so the grubs are, the white grubs are, they're most sensitive to treatment around the 4th of July. And typically when you see the patterns of damage, it's too late. So they lay their eggs around the 4th of July, and this is Japanese beetle, the most common white grub that we have. And then they start to feed on the roots, and they don't cause a lot of damage now, but then they start to get bigger, they overwinter, and then they come back in the spring, and they just chew on those roots like crazy. But it's usually wet and cool in the spring, so you don't notice the damage until maybe late June. And by then, the grubs are ready to emerge, and it's too late. So controlling grubs around the time of the 4th of July is going to be the best shot at preventing them for next year. But once you see the damage this year, there's not much you can do about it.
Oh, there you go, Donna. Thank you for calling. EJ in Price County, your turn. Hi, EJ.
Hi. We have a lot of problem with
moss. There are parts of our lawn that we welcome it, and it's wonderful. But then other parts, it really, we would prefer not to have it. Any recommendations on controlling moss?
Yeah, moss is an interesting one because it's one, when we see moss somewhere, it's just an indication that there's something wrong with the growing environment. It can be too much shade, and it can also be really poor soil and droughty because, you know, moss can grow in a variety of conditions. And the reason it's there is because the grass won't grow there. So that's usually what we try to do is figure out, like, what's the problem with the grass here? And so if you've eliminated shade as a possibility, if you think your soil's in good shape, I would just dig it up. It's not even rooted because I don't think moss typically has botanical roots. You just dig it up, reseed it, and then just care for it by fertilizing properly, mowing properly, and it shouldn't come back. So it's not like it doesn't tend to invade healthy stands of grass. So you might need to start over. Maybe you can lay some sod where you want to have grass and just keep that sod healthy. But like I said, it could be you have an underlying issue that you need to correct because the grass will continue to struggle in that spot.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Jan in Viroqua, it's your turn. Hi, Jan. Jan, are you there? Maybe we lost Jan. Well, let's go to David in Altoona then. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, last fall we took down a huge oak, and I had someone come in, and I ground down the stump, you know. And this spring I loosened the soil, added a little bit, and I tried to get rid of most of the wood chips. And then I put grass seed and more grass seed that watered like crazy, and it's really looking bad. So was the wood chips the problem, or is it the huge oak tree there, or is it just me?
Yeah, growing grass on old stumps can be challenging for a number of reasons. It could be that the wood chips or there's too many wood chips there, like you mentioned. The other thing you'll see is that as that stump decays, it'll start to settle and sink, and to the point where you're either scalping it with the mower or you can't mow in it anymore. And so I would say just expect this to be a battle for you for the next couple of years. And also when you seeded it, this was a really tough summer. So my advice would be start over from scratch again, bring in some more soil, level it out, and put the seed down. I think the weather is going to be, going to give you a lot more success. And then hopefully you get a good stand coming into next year and not too many more problems. But I would just give it another shot. Growing grass on old stumps can be quite the challenge.
Yeah, for sure. Back to Creeping Charlie for a minute here. A listener in Pewaukee emailed, the lawn's overrun with the Creeping Charlie. They use weed and feed in the spring. What can you do to get rid of Creeping Charlie?
Yeah, so the weed and feed in the spring is you got two things that are working against you there. So we already talked about earlier on the show how weed and feed herbicides are less effective than liquid products, and then also the timing is a bit off. So I would suggest trying a product like triclopyr, which is a lower risk herbicide that happens to be very effective against Creeping Charlie or ground ivy. And then you want to do that around the time of the first frost. And so with a liquid application of triclopyr at the first frost, you're going to have, I think, much better results.
On to Bob in Rhinelander. He emailed this year. He's been using lime and a 19-19-19 fertilizer mix on primarily sandy soil. His lawn and flowers seem to be responding favorably. Is this a good path? I'm not so sure about the phosphorus part of that, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. So lime is good when your soil pH is less than 5.5. So this would be a good time to plug the benefits of soil testing. Send in a soil to the to a soil testing lab. The Wisconsin State Soil Testing Lab is actually in transition right now from Marshfield back down to Madison. But there are many good soil testing labs that you can use. They'll tell you the pH of your soil, and they'll tell you whether or not your lawn will respond to lime or not. And then they'll also tell you if you need phosphorus. And so like Larry mentioned, most lawns in Wisconsin don't benefit from phosphorus, and the phosphorus just creates water quality problems. And so if you don't need phosphorus, according to the soil test, then switch to a fertilizer with a zero as a middle number. 19-0-19 would be a better choice. But soil testing is definitely a good practice to make sure that we're putting down the right products for our lawn.
Bob in Rhinelander emailed this year. Jim in Middleton emailed wondering, is Kentucky bluegrass an invasive species?
It is not an invasive species. This is something that the Wisconsin DNR has looked at. It's not included on the list of invasive species, and I think the reason we do this show is because it's not an invasive species. It's hard to grow, and we need to maintain it and cut it just right and fertilize it in a certain way. And it doesn't like shade, so it doesn't invade the woodlands. But it's a good question. Our grass species that we talk about on the show are not native to North America for the most part. So these are mostly imported from Europe. And they, while they're naturalized in the United States, the ones that we're using and selling are not invasive.
And back to our emails with photographs, Jen in Madison emailed, she's having trouble with very large anthills in her yard. She heard on a previous show that these are beneficial to pollinators or prairies, and she wants to avoid killing the ants if possible, if they're helpful to the environment, but makes for an ugly lawn, as she shows in her photo. What can she do?
Yeah, this is a good one. This comes up a lot too. And I think the idea that, you know, you're not only do you not want to kill the ants if you can avoid it, they're also very difficult to control. And so even if you did try to control them, chances are that you wouldn't have complete success. So when they make these large mounds, and I know personally I have two of these large mounds in my yard, that they're so large that the mower can't even go around them. Some advice from that I got from Iowa State is to use a hose to blast that soil mound down, and then you have to every week keep it smooth and keep it down. And so I'm looking at this picture now of this clumps and messes, and I think about it now is like the ant hill is something that I need to address and clean up in my yard to meet my goals, right? So like we pick up leaves or we pick up our dog's waste, you're gonna have to pay attention to those ant mounds and not let them get out of control if you want to coexist with those ants. But I think that's probably the best we can do with those critters.
Let's take another call. Jan in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Yes. Hi, Larry. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
I'm looking for a recommendation of something to mix with micro clover in a full sun environment as a no-mow weed block. I was wondering about possibly thyme. I'd like it to be a perennial. And if so, what variety you would recommend to be as, you know, low enough to be no-mow, and when to plant it.
Yeah, so not, but right now is about the perfect time to plant a spot like that. I'm going to be really honest and say, if it's not a grass, I don't know much else about it. So micro clover, I like to plant micro clover with Kentucky bluegrass and fine fescue. And we found that those three species are really good partners. There's likely lots of other things that you can include in a mix like that. But from my research and experience, those are the species I know the most about, and those are a great combination. Micro clover, fine fescue, Kentucky bluegrass.
There you go, Jan. Thank you. Rick in Darlington, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I have a bagger on my mower, and I pick my grass up every time I mow. Should I not be doing that? And how high should you mow your grass?
Yeah, good one. So, I can't think of too many reasons to collect grass. The mulching mowers out there are so good now that unless you maybe you went away on vacation or things got way out of control where you can't get through it, that's the only reason I would bag, because those clippings contain nutrients and nitrogen that the mulching mowers chop up really finely and return to the grass. It's free fertilizer. And the research that's been done over the years show it's actually equivalent to one fertilization app for the year. So definitely if you can mulch that down, you should be doing it. And then how high I like to think about it as how high can you tolerate it? The higher you can cut, the deeper your roots are going to be and the less weed pressure you're going to have. Personally, I mow my lawn between 2.5 and 3 inches. Some of the mowers today go even higher than that. But as high as you can tolerate with a sharp mower blade and mulch those clippings back is the best way you can mow for a healthy lawn.
Yeah, good advice. Thank you very much for that call. Appreciate it. Jenny in Verona emailed in about the earlier caller having issues with dog urinating on the lawn. Her dog was doing the same thing. She took her to the vet and found the dog had crystals which went away with medication. Crystals. So...
Right. Yeah, I think, and we've heard things like that too. Callers have asked, well, I heard if you give my dog tomato juice, it'll make their urine this or that. And I would say, go to, talk to your vet, talk to your vet about the issue. And maybe it could be pointing to a condition that your dog has that could be corrected. We don't want to give veterinary advice here, but if your dog's creating problems in your lawn, that's a good resource to talk to the vet about.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's see, another email. Joe in Madison, as last year he bought property in central Wisconsin. It was very sandy soil. Lawn's very thin with a considerable amount of weeds. Many are broadleaf weeds. He hasn't treated them since he's a bit leery of leaching chemicals into their well water. Is that a valid concern? And what should you advise to address the weedy lawn on a sandy soil, along with potential safe chemicals treatments? Would overseeding help? Is this the best time to do it?
Right. Yeah. So the Environmental Protection Agency labels, registers herbicides for use in all kinds of areas, and herbicides that are susceptible to leaching to the point where groundwater contamination is a concern won't be labeled for that use. So if the product is labeled and used properly, you should not be contaminating your well water. However, that said, there's always a risk involved in that type of application, and people have different risk tolerances. So I'm going to answer the question from the least impact you can have and still kill your weeds is going to be a product that contains iron, HEDTA. One of the brand names is Fiesta. I've seen it called Iron X. But it's relatively expensive, but also innocuous and fairly effective on broadleaf weeds. So you could try that. It's obviously going to be more cost effective as a spot spray. I'm not sure how big your area is. But then, you can overseed fine fescue into that sandy soil and then fertilize it once or twice a year to keep it dense. And that should keep the weeds at bay. For the most part. And I think that's probably going to be your bet for your situation.
Yeah, it makes good sense. A listener emailed, they had rust develop this year in new grass, rye fescue and Kentucky blue. It has abated now, but is there anything they can do next year to prevent it?
Rust is another one of those diseases that's really common when the weather gets tough. And it attacks grasses that aren't growing very well. And when the temperatures are too hot, too humid, grasses don't grow well. So the rust comes in, gets all over your shoes, and there's really nothing you can do except for wait for more optimal conditions to return. Sometimes you can help rust go away faster by irrigating if it's dry, or fertilizing if you don't already fertilize. But if you're doing those things, if you're keeping your lawn moist through drought periods and you're fertilizing normally, I wouldn't recommend doing those things in addition or more than you already are.
Going back to that product you mentioned on weed control, the expensive one, the iron-based one, I believe someone was wondering, how expensive is it? What does it typically cost for a lawn?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have exact prices, but it's so expensive I could only afford to use it in a kind of hand spray bottle. Like, it wouldn't be something you could treat your entire lawn with, but you could keep a few bottles in stock and spray individual weeds with it. Spot treating is economically feasible, but it's not used by lawn care companies typically because of the volumes of material that are required. So yeah, check it out. You probably find it in a lot of different places on shelves at local garden stores as well.
Yeah, and what's it called again? It's
Fiesta is one name brand. Oh. Iron X. I think there's an EcoSense label. There's a lot of different options, but the product, the active ingredient is iron, H-E-D-T-A.
Iron, H-D-T-A.
H-E-D-H-E-D-T-A.
All right.
It's a mouthful. Yeah.
It is a mouthful. Have we covered all of the pests that are, all the things that we still need to look at for fall?
I think so, yeah. I think the most common mistake I see people make is that they don't prioritize the first frost as a really important time for broadleaf weed control. It's usually done in the spring or maybe now. So consider that if you're in that boat. But other than that, mow your grass properly and then feed it around Memorial Day and get things looking good again.
And what are you working on in your lab right now? You've talked about several things that were going on or mentioned them as you were answering questions, but what's your main thrust right now?
Oh, we have all kinds of different thrusts. Yeah, that's the best part about this job. There's so many different things we're working on. We're working on, so I mentioned the lawn ecology. So we're looking at how different species change over time and how lawns evolve and trying to identify what's the optimum kind of low maintenance composition of species. We're also doing a lot of work with the microclovers. We're evaluating new species or new cultivars of fine fescue so that hopefully the species we're planting down the road are going to be even more robust. We're building nitrogen fertilization tools to help golf courses fertilize their greens and their fairways better. So, yeah, all kinds of fun stuff going on.
Lots of good things going on. And, Doug, it's always, you do such a great job. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us today, and we'll look forward to another visit. Thanks, Doug.
Oh, you bet, Larry. Thanks. It's so fun.
Doug Soldat, a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. His PhD was in horticulture and specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, and a whole lot more. And doesn't he do a great job? It's always fun to have him with us. Well, just take a look ahead to Monday. On Monday, we're going to learn more about the history, work, and people of the Peace Corps. And they are celebrating their 60th anniversary. And Wisconsin has quite a record with the Peace Corps in terms of volunteers. We've had right there in one of the top states. So look forward to that. And then the weather guys and a new meteorologist stationed in Wausau joins us for an update on the latest in Wisconsin weather and climate. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. But, hey, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.